you can feel so alone these days and feel so kind of absorbed by things that are on our, you know, that aren't here in face value, but maybe on our phone. So when you get the chance to be part of something and not feel like the only one, that's all it is for me.
Willkommen in einem neuen Jahr Vogue Stories. Mein Name ist Alexandra Bondi De Antoni und für Vogue treffe ich Menschen, die uns in der Redaktion bewegen, die Vogue prägen, Vogue machen und Vogue sind. Während ich mich in der ersten Staffel mit der Geschichte von Vogue Germany auseinandergesetzt habe, geht es dieses Jahr um gesellschaftliche Themen im Modekontext. Ich freue mich riesig, dass es weitergeht und möchte euch auch gleich meinen ersten Gast vorstellen, das britische Topmodel Adwoa Aboah. Adwoa ist zurzeit weltweit eines der gefragtesten Models. Ihr Leben wirkt aus der Ferne wie der Traum vieler. Modenschauen, Partys, berühmte Freunde, in Paris aufwachen und abends in London ins Bett gehen. Immer mit dabei sind ihre Instagram-Follower, mit denen sie ihr Leben teilt. Doch bei der 27-Jährigen ist etwas anders. Zwischen die glamourösen Bilder mischen sich persönliche Posts über ihren geistigen Gesundheitszustand, negative Momente und die Einsamkeit, die dieser Lebensstil mit sich ziehen kann. Offen teilt unser März-Coverstar ihre Geschichte. Drogenabhängigkeit, Selbstmordversuch, Entzug, der Weg zurück in den Alltag, das Hinfallen und Wiederaufstehen, das sich nicht mehr selber trauen und Routinen finden. Sie spricht das aus, wo andere sich abwenden. Wegen einer Grippe geht man zum Arzt und lässt sich krank schreiben. Von den negativen Gedanken und den daraus folgenden persönlichen Konsequenzen bekommt oftmals niemand etwas mit. Zum ersten Mal habe ich Adwoa vor 3 Jahren in Berlin getroffen. Damals war sie mit ihrem Projekt Girls Talk in der Hauptstadt zu Gast. Bei unserem heutigen Gespräch geht es darum, wie Girls Talk eigentlich entstanden ist und was sich seitdem verändert hat. Wir sprechen darüber, wie es sich anfühlt, in Therapie zu gehen, wie Sport ihr geholfen hat, sich besser zu fühlen und was sie alles noch so vorhat.
Can you maybe for everyone who doesn't know what Girls Talk is about, just explain quickly what you guys been doing for 4 years now?
Yeah.
5 years?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're a kind of a social platform. But it's way more than that. We navigate online and offline, and we're creating a space wherein women and girls and men, if they so want to come, can feel like they have a place where they can talk about anything that's going on in their lives. It's both educational, but it also concentrates on the emotional part of one's life, and it means to be a young girl right now and all the issues that might come with that, and actually feeling like you have a space to talk about that. I feel like we are the older sister and the best friend and the mum, because so many of our community have grown with us. You know, they've gone through school as we've kind of grown over those 5 years, and that's what I love more. You know, I love that so much, that we're talking about things that people felt like they weren't able to talk about before.
How did it pick up then when you first started? How were the first reactions?
Oh, we had such great reactions. I mean, I think it just showed that it was really needed and that everyone wanted a space like this. I'm always kind of blown away by how much people love it and what it means to them. And I think, you know, even if you don't know about Girls Talk, you know, we obviously have like hardcore members who are there at every event and every workshop, and who are like, you know, listening to every podcast. But even if you don't know about it, which especially was the case on the school tour, what we were bringing was, we were just bringing that space. It didn't even matter if you weren't part of Girls Talk, or, you know, you didn't know about it, or you don't follow us on Instagram or whatever. It was like we were just bringing that confidential space, which is what we all need. And I think now what's great is, you know, for 2020, we are really just kind of now working on, you know, we got our charitable status in the USA. So
amazing.
Yeah. So it's amazing. So we're really just working on bringing it to the next level. There's no reason why we can't be kind of aiming towards getting to a place where we have our own programs within school systems, or we're working with other charities that are already out there doing amazing things. And I want it, Girls Talk, to keep on growing, because it isn't just a social platform.
Back when we met for the first time, we talked a lot about being educated about mental health. You mentioned that when you were growing up, no one really talked about mental health problems, and there were so many stigmatas and social norms around that. Did you see that change since then?
I think it's changed, but I think that still within certain generations, myself included, I think things are ingrained in us. And I think whether that be race or mental health and inclusion and diversity, I still have to check myself when I go into certain situations that I don't, because I've been programmed to think that it's not for me or I'm not part of that because of things that I've seen growing up, and because it was, there was so little like kind of inclusion and education around mental health, I have to check myself to say that things have changed, and they actually have, because, you know, you can see in all kind of situations there are places and communities that have opened where one can feel like themselves in it and they can talk about mental health. And I think I see that a lot with my community, especially because they're a lot younger, that they are...
When you talk about your community, you mean...
The Girls Talk community, mm-hmm. Yeah. That it's part of their like kind of everyday conversation. You know, asking someone what pronouns they want to go by is becoming their like social norm. And I think that's really amazing. It's, these are things that I have to teach myself now, because I wasn't like kind of brought up in that way, and I wasn't kind of, I didn't have that language. So I think it really is changing.
What was the biggest lesson that you learned from working with Girls Talk?
The biggest lesson is that I'm just always learning. And I'm really kind of, it's probably one of the things I find most exciting about it. I get the chance to, especially in the podcast, to speak to so many people, learn about what's going on in their life, circumstances that I haven't been like kind of, that haven't been my reality. I get a little, you know, segment, I get to see what it's like for them in that moment. The empathy that it's created in me, that it's, you know, blown my vulnerability and sensitivity to an even bigger level, which was something that I always resented, but it's something that is so key to all the work that I do in Girls Talk. I really have absolutely no judgment to any story that's, you know, given to me. And I think that's what it makes kind of certain situations where I'm talking to people a lot easier, because I'm really coming at you with a complete, like, clear slate. You know, if you want to talk to me about something, you can feel so alone these days and feel so kind of absorbed by things that are on our, you know, that aren't here in face value, but maybe on our phone. So when you get the chance to be part of something and not feel like the only one, that's all it is for me, I think.
Do you remember the first time when you really felt part of a community and you didn't feel that alone anymore?
I think definitely entering into the rooms of like NA and AA was definitely probably the first time I really felt like, oh, I feel safe here. But now, but I didn't think that was going to be my community forever. Mm-hmm. You know, the one, I think probably our first, maybe New York, our first Girls Talk event in New York was probably like, when I was like, yeah, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be.
You started Girls Talks and all your activism started from your own, the things that you struggled from. Was there a point where in your recovery or in the way that you've set up Girls Talk that you thought, okay, I'm going to advocate for mental health education? Or was it more of a slow process that developed while talking with different people in rehab? Or
I was like serious from the get-go. I highly believe that as soon as I shared my story, as soon as I posted it on my Instagram, I can't remember the exact kind of moment, that was my like dedication, mm-hmm. to doing it for the rest of my life. I always knew that this was going to be like my lifelong kind of journey, mm-hmm. of like whatever it takes. So it kind of wasn't probably slow burning. It's probably got more serious in terms of like the amount of work and the way our community's grown. There's more responsibility, you know. I think it's so easy now to like be a do-gooder, but what does that even mean? Like, I don't want to just be a do-gooder. I want to actually do stuff. I want to, you know, I'm like highly ambitious, but I feel like I feel like a great responsibility for all the people.
Back when we talked in 2017, one of the things you said and that stuck with me was that spreading the word is pretty exhausting, but I'm happy to be tired. And for me, I can only imagine how hard it must be to, on the one hand, try to help other people, but then also stay sane and good with yourself. Can you say something about that? So how do you, because back in the day, you also said that you were just setting up the boundaries, that you just started this process to also like keeping stuff to yourself.
Yeah.
How did that develop?
I think there definitely has to be an element of privacy in terms of, I think it more comes with being in the spotlight in terms of like socially. There are just things that I want to be just for me. But in terms of my community, not really. I don't really have any boundaries. I'm quite useless at that. But I just feel so like, I feel like any girl I meet, I adore, I love, because it's like a weird family. So I just also think, I feel like a greater bond is created if I like share parts of, I don't need to always like take it back to me, but you know, in many situations, I'm learning so much from the people I get the chance to speak to. There's always part of me that wants to share about what's going on in my life. But it is tiring, but I speak, you know, I did this amazing kind of workshop at the UN for like activism, and a lot of the activists I spoke to were exhausted. You know, we have a tendency of burning out all the time, because I think it's not, you know, if you take it seriously, it's not 9 to 5. Like, I don't wake up and the problem's solved, and you know, everyone's all jolly and like happy to talk about mental health. It's like an ongoing process, so I think it's never ending. So it is exhausting, but it's one that I feel very privileged to be part of. It's an exhaustion that I don't resent, because I feel like the more I give, the more I get back.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about how one can deal with bad thoughts, because I think one of the things, I was in therapy for bulimia for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that people don't get is that when you are in therapy, the real work starts afterwards. Yeah, so when you go back into reality and you have to deal with your old circle or your old habits, your old life and habit. So did you find like a way that you can, that you trained your brain that when bad thoughts are coming, do you have any tips maybe how you deal with that?
I mean, I think that's something really important for people to know, is that definitely the real work happens when you're out there by yourself, and you still obviously got the support, but you're really having to kind of, you know, things pop up and you'll remember what your, you know, counselor or therapist or whoever's told you, and you're like, now you have to put that into practice. I mean, exercise is really key for me. I have to. And it's amazing that it's become something so based on what I would like to look like, you know. Obviously that's great, but
what do you mean with that?
You know, that it's not just about kind of being thin. It's really like key to my recovery, and about kind of my anxiety and being able to manage life. I have to like exercise. So that would be one for me.
Do you go to the gym when you see like bad thoughts are coming, or do you...
I just do it before.
Okay.
Yeah, I do it before. It's like, I spoke about this on a podcast recently. We were talking about preventative recovery, and you know, it's things like that. I try and put into place comfort blankets, so that before, so that if I do get to those points, I have support. you know, I think I have a tendency of still feeling like sometimes I don't want to be a burden to people or whatever. I'm still learning about, you know, kind of how not to burn myself out, how to like kind of manage my like stress before it gets so bad that I have to be like, oh, I can't do it. I've got to like cancel everything. But I think that's about me being like kind of a slight perfectionist and workaholic and all sorts of things. I made, you know, I think it's really important to, I'm very particular about the energy that I give to people. I think I need to protect my energy in myself. So that's something that I think is really good in terms of like bad thoughts and, you know, not feeling let down by people. Mm-hmm. It's not about not trusting anybody, but it's like, you know, just keeping a tight group around you and like people that you can really, really trust and not spreading yourself thin because you want to be liked or you want loads of friends, you know. And taking time to myself is really key. So much of my work revolves around people and being around people, both my fashion work and all the work with Girls Talk. So for me, it's really important that I listen to my body. And when it says, you know,
chill out,
chill out, you know, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to do that. If you want to like hang out with your family or hang out by yourself, that's fine.
Mm. Did your addiction or your illness change the way that you look at yourself and your body? Or do you still see yourself like the girl before?
No, I think I see them as completely two different people, really. I don't really feel very part of that person anymore, which I suppose is a nice thing. It feels like quite, although it feels sometimes like only the other day, it feels like I've worked so hard to like kind of on myself that sometimes it feels like that's just a completely different person.
Mm.
And the way I look at myself is definitely through definitely a more positive lens. You know, I feel like I'm a lot more self-assured and I know my worth way more than I did before. Mm. And because I had no self-worth, I always looked at myself in a very kind of negative way. I know what I'm capable of, which always makes things a lot easier for me.
I think it's easier when you know that when you're at the bad spot that you know that it's going to go away again.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you can like pull yourself out.
And I think
out,
also,
no?
Yeah, and I talk about this quite often. I think because I've been in those dark places and sometimes, you know, I go back to them. We all have a tendency of like complaining or whatever, you know, just as humans do. But I'm definitely a lot more positive about my life. And I think because I've had the chance to speak to so many different people who are in like, have been in like worse situations or whatever it is, I'm able to like be very grateful about things and push through because I've already pushed through so much in the past. Like I'm definitely like stronger than I think.
Would you also consider this maybe your biggest strength that you can push through and that you can keep
my
going?
My mom always says that, which is probably something that is a strength, but obviously probably why like I burn out so easily because I can just keep on going.
Are you sometimes afraid that you're going to fall back into that really black hole?
Oh yeah, always. I think I don't know anyone. Well, maybe that's just assuming, but I think most people who have like had to go through a journey of recovery are always slightly scared they're going to go back.
Yeah.
I think there will always be a person in the back of my head who's like a bit worried. Always. I'm slightly worried, like, you know, what if I fall too, like if I go too deep and I fall too far into that hole and I don't know how to get myself back out again. And it's definitely happened before. And I think that is a worry, of course, because it's like, you know, I think you always think you're maybe past it. Maybe you think you're stronger than it, but it is always there.
This is what my therapist always told me. He was like, you're just clean. You will always have that kind of addiction thing in you.
Yeah,
once
yeah.
you have it, you have it and you just have to stay clean. It's the same with eating disorders. When
yeah.
you you can fall back into the trap over yeah. and over again.
And I think that's, you know, quite exhausting in itself, because it's like, I can't ever take my eye off my mental health. I always have to be like, try and be slightly ahead of it, because I don't really know. Like, my mental health is like, it's definitely fragile, and it's, although I'm like strong, it's like, who knows? So I have to be like one step ahead of it in terms of like making sure that, you know.
Do you, in a lot of interviews, you talked about that you're very, very, very close to your mom. Is there anything maybe that she said to you, an advice that she gave you about this whole process?
Oh, I'm so close to my mom and my dad. Really, really close. And they, I think them just being there, you know, they really are just so understanding, and they take the time to like really listen to me, which has been like key. I think that's all you really need sometimes. You don't need someone to try and fix you or tell you what to do. Just sometimes just having someone to like bounce shit off and just be like, this is what's going on. Because you don't always want to go to a friend, and I feel lucky in that. You know, that's why family is so important, and why it's so heartbreaking when you can't speak to your family about certain things. I think my mom, you know, she's got like the most amazing work ethic. She's so, I think the way she works is beautiful. I think her relationships with people are amazing. I think the way she manages, not always, but to balance work and her personal life is amazing. I think they'll all be great lessons for me when I have like a family of my own, and the way she's been able to like, you know, create such great foundations with my dad for my sister and I, but has also created such an amazing, you know, company and worked really hard. And although I'm sure that things have been sacrificed, and she wasn't at every school play, and she didn't pick me up from school, but, you know, she wasn't that kind of mum. But the mum she's been has been amazing. And I think those lessons have been great in terms of just being a woman, and, you know, the world telling you now that you can do everything. But it's like sometimes quite hard to like, you're like, well, can I really? Well, can I have a relationship and a work life and buy a house and have children one day? It's like, you're telling me this, but it's like, I don't, you know, it's really hard. And I think that's been nice. It's like, you know, it's definitely not been easy, but she's managed it all. And I think, you know, in terms of my mental health, she has a, you know, they both have a really great understanding, and they've been through their own things. And they've grieved like so many times about all sorts of things. And I think it's always nice, you know, however sometimes scary it is, I think, to see your parents vulnerable. I find that a major lesson when I see my parents, you know, when I see their vulnerability, when they feel like they're able to just be like human with me. I always like.
Did your relationship change during your recovery?
Yeah, massively. Massively.
Did it maybe open up?
Yeah, it was like, you know, it was obviously shit at some points. And then it was a bit kind of overbearing at some points, but obviously understandably, because they were very worried about me. And I think, and then it became like, you know, friendship. And definitely with my sister, it was like tumultuous and like resentful. And then it became, you know, very, very close. And then after that, you know, then you kind of, you know, what did my sister say to me? She was like, she spent so much time thinking I was so unwell and being so worried about me. And then when I got my life together, you know, you forget that the person is, it's their journey. So they suddenly go off and they do their own thing. And she was like, oh, you know, okay, I don't need to worry about her anymore. Like, now I can start doing my own life. And so you have that journey in itself. So it's been so amazing to see her like kind of, you know, fall in love and travel and, you know, not necessarily have to worry about her older sister so much.
What, in your words, would it be to be a woman today?
I think it's a hard question. I think it's a great time, but also not necessarily confusing, but I think maybe sometimes quite overwhelming, you know, having so many kind of great, you know, possibilities, like the possibilities being kind of endless for you in different kind of ways, sometimes can feel overwhelming, I think. But I wouldn't, you know, want to go back. You know, I'm excited that we individually feel so kind of empowered to do like what we want to do. What I like more so about it is I feel like we're a lot more supportive of each other than we have been. That I try, you know, I might not agree with, you know, every woman that, you know, says, you know, whatever they're saying. I might not agree with your kind of ideas behind feminism, if that's what feminism is for you or whatever it is, but I can just like, I'm willing to get behind you in just so I can just support us as like a kind of, as a group. I feel as like there should be absolutely no, like, I think we're done with the like pointing fingers at each other, because I think that's only led us to become like more estranged and feel like we can't talk to each other about things. I think that was something quite amazing about like kind of the Me Too movement, that it, although it, you know, held people accountable for their actions, it also, it showcased what happens when we're not always pinned against each other, we're not always competitive with each other, and what happens when we actually just like listen to each other and like want to support one another. Because yeah, you know, lots of, you know, I'm sure men are definitely understandable and are becoming more kind of educated on what it means to be a woman, but there's nothing beats a conversation with a woman.
Yeah. I also think that maybe our society was built by men, so it was easier, I guess, for them to make us fight with each other to maybe keep us in check. And
yeah,
now
I think so.
It's all changing.
I think it's a lot easier. We're definitely like, we're so strong. So I mean, think about what we do monthly.
Oh yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like what we all have to go through. And like, you know, just in general, all the things we have to go through. So I think it was probably easier to have us all kind of fight against each other and be like bitchy or whatever it is. But now I think that's what I love the most about being a woman these days.
How does it work to be part of the fashion industry and at the same time be an advocate for mental health? Because, I mean, you're constantly judged for the way that you look and the way that your body looks and maybe behaves even. How do you combine that with staying sane and being with yourself?
I don't know if they really work, to be honest. There's something I'm like, I only say that because it's just something I'm like kind of in the midst of right now, is even thinking if there's, you know, I think fashion industry has a major power force in terms of like the messaging it can get out, and I think that's brilliant, and it should be used if you have been given a platform by them and, you know, you have a voice within the industry, you know, I think that's great. But whether they can work side by side, I don't know. I don't think so. Because unless that structure changes, it will always kind of contradict everything that.
But that doesn't stop you trying, or?
I don't know if it doesn't stop me trying. It pushes me to kind of try and find a way of, I think it's more about, I think personally, I think the more I don't know if it's about necessarily changing that. I think there are certain things we can change, obviously. I think
in the industry.
In the industry. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, it really comes to being quite personal and how, you know, if I work on myself and I get to a place and I keep on getting to a place where I'm happy in this body, that can only, you know, send out good messaging in terms of like everything that I do with Girls Talk. So I think that's where I try and kind of focus on like, you know, every time I'm like, I catch myself being like, oh my God, look, you know, the rise of like plastic surgery, you know, every time those things come into my like psyche, I'm like, okay, well, let's like go back to basics and what you kind of are learning within Girls Talk and all these people you talk to and what it is that you're trying to like set about and what the messaging you're trying to put across. That's what I kind of try and concentrate on. I mm-hmm. think I can only be my true self, and I think that will hopefully send out like the right messages.
Mm-hmm. Is there one thing that you try to achieve right now?
It's like quite slightly never ending for me. I don't ever think like, oh, I've done it. I'm just like, okay, how can I do it better? I just think that's just the way I am. I don't know. Like, I think, you know, there have definitely been like milestones, but I'm always like, okay, so 2019 done. Like, what's like, what can we do more of? Like, and it's not necessarily about success, to be honest. Like, I don't want more fame. Definitely not. There's definitely things that I'd like to push myself in, and I think I'm only like showcasing like parts of it right now, and there's still like I can like still stuff that I'm learning, and I know that I'm really up for like challenges, and like, so there are, you know, there are maybe like bucket list things, like, you know, I'd love to do a TED talk and stuff like that, but it's not, those aren't like, you know, okay, I've done it now, I can like stop. It's just like never ending.
Do you think there will ever be a point where you said, okay, I can stop now because this and this happened? Or do you think that it's going to be a conversation that will like be at your deathbed?
Yeah, no, I think, I don't know. And I think it's like, I don't even know if I'm doing it to see like all the changes that are being made. Like I'm doing it, you know, I'd love to be alive when, you know, and see like all the hard work that we've all been doing, like actually kind of be like our reality. But if not, like, I'm still going to continue doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if not for me, then for like my children's children or whatever, I don't know.
And last question, if we would sit here again, say in 5 years, where would you love to see Girls Talk and the work that you've been doing?
So I'll be 32. I would like to have our charitable status in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to have our own like kind of internal program set up for young girls in the educational system. I would like to have maybe even a space, our own like physical space that is the kind of Girls Talk room that people can come to. I'd like you to be sitting in my house, and I'd like to have figured out personally, like, I think I'm still learning how to do it all. Like, I know it's a possibility for us, like, that we are capable of like so much, and that we can be mothers, and we don't, you know, that things will have to be sacrificed, but I think I'd like to be sitting here with you and be like, you know, I'm in an amazing relationship, and I'm learning how to like juggle my personal life and my career. We'll see.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
Danke, dass ihr auch bei dieser Folge Vogue Stories mit dabei wart. Abonniert den Podcast doch jetzt auf Apple, Spotify, Soundcloud und überall da, wo es Podcasts gibt. Vogue Stories wird von Mitvergnügen produziert. Ich hoffe, ihr seid auch das nächste Mal mit dabei. Bussi, ciao und bis dann!